Podcasting worldwide from Vancouver, Canada. Welcome back to the Personal Process Podcast. The show that takes you through the growth, hardship, self-discovery, lessons, and stories of individuals who achieved success in their own personal path. Trust the process.
Welcome back to the Personal Process Podcast. Today's guest, Michael Norris, Chief Marketing Officer, and we have a very interesting view of marketing and kind of just how everything came about. So, Michael Norris, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing really well, Parham. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So, Michael, do you mind just giving us a little background about yourself? Like, how did you become like a Chief Marketing Officer, which is really cool on its own?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting journey. When I was a kid, I never thought to myself, Chief Marketing Officer, you know?
Yeah.
I think I wanted to be Batman or Firefighter or something like that. no, but it all started, I will say my parents are, they've owned their own marketing agency since I was a kid. And they, you know, my dinner conversations always centered around marketing and business.
Yeah.
You know, them being business owners, I mean, and me being a kid, I wanted to talk about video games and you know, that kind of stuff. And I kept telling myself, I was like, I will never do this. This sounds terrible. It sounds like an awful, awful thing.
Yeah.
And but I did pick up a lot despite that, you know, despite my negative attitude, I learned a lot. And what was nice was that, you know, I ended up going to college and I originally thought that I was going to be an English teacher. An English teacher. Yeah, that was what I wanted to do. So I majored in English.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, you know what? I'd rather be a history teacher.
History.
And I ended up learning that a male history teacher is, at the time, I think someone told me it was the most common teacher out there.
Is that right?
That's probably not good for my job prospects. I don't know if that was true or not, but someone told me that and I believed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, what can I do? You know, I can't be a history teacher. I like English, but do I want to teach it? No. So I went back to English and I decided I was going to be an English major.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I was going to do with that, but I was going to do something with English.
Right.
And then that morphed into, I was going to go into law. I figured, you know, I'm a smart guy. I can do that. And I got a law clerk internship kind of thing at a family law firm.
Sweet.
And it was terrible. It was honestly terrible.
What didn't you like about it?
Well, my personal stuff that I was doing wasn't terrible. I mean, it was, it was clerical work. I was filing things. I was looking through cases and all that. But the number one thing, I mean, the head guy, he kept saying to me over and over again, he was like, be a dentist. You don't want to do this. He kept saying,
really?
Be a dentist. In my like card as I left, he wrote, be a dentist. But it was, you know, I was just watching the people there and the attorneys and stuff. And I mean, they'd be falling asleep, sitting up at their desks. They all looked miserable. They all just seemed like, and family law too is not the kind of law you want to practice, at least in my opinion. Like everyone's getting divorced. Nobody's really happy. Even if you do a great job, I mean, you know, they're still getting divorced at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So there's no winners in that situation. And so I went back to the drawing board. I said, I'm not going to do this.
Okay.
In philosophy. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to major in philosophy. Whatever happens, happens.
Yep.
And, you know, everyone kept telling me I wouldn't get a job with that, but I was able to fall back on my parents because they own that marketing agency. So I graduated and they gave me a job as a project manager over there. And I was doing, you know, general project management type tasks. I was organizing things. I was making sure stuff went out on time. But they also kind of took me under their wing. I mean, I was their son. They wanted to make sure they taught me everything. So I worked there for 1 year.
Yeah.
And at that time, a girl that I went to college with, she's one of my really good friends, still is. She's actually our COO at UTech, where I currently work, the agency.
Yeah.
And she reached out to me on LinkedIn message. And she said to me, hey, how much do you like your current job? And I was like, I mean, I like it, but I don't want to stay here forever. You know, I didn't want to be in my parents' shadow. I wanted to do something for myself, carve out my own niche. And so I interviewed, I got the job, and I became a project manager at UTAC, where I currently work.
Yep.
And I mean, from day one, man, I've just loved it. I got to do a variety of things that I don't think I would have had the opportunity to anywhere else. It was a small mm-hmm. agency at the time, so I was the temp employee.
Right.
And I was doing everything from, I was doing social media, I was doing SEO, I was writing all the content for this client, I was meeting with the client, and it was our biggest client at the time too. So, still a great client of ours, but, I got to learn so much doing pay-per-click advertising. I was doing stuff on Reddit and, figuring that out. And it was a whole lot of trial and error. I mean, there were a whole lot misses. There were a whole lot of swings, whole lot of hits, but a whole lot of misses too. So, it was good, but my CEO, my boss, he's about a year younger than me. I just turned 30. He's 29. Okay. And he had started the company in his parents' basement, actually, when he was like 22.
Classic.
like $600 to his name. And he would feed the first couple employees with like dollar menu McDonald's items. He'd pay them when he could. So it was that. I mean, I didn't come in at that point. We had an office when I came in, but there was still that big time startup feel when I got in, and that was about six years ago. And we still maintain that today, but he saw some potential in me, and I'll forever be indebted to him for that, because he promoted me, and I started to oversee all of our marketing clients. And we went from a company that did a whole lot of website building and development to a marketing and I just kind of gradually moved up. I was director of content, I was director of search, and then I was VP of marketing, and now I'm CMO, which we've got about 60 employees right now. I will say, you think CMO, you think big Fortune 500 company. I'm not that. I'm not going to pretend I'm that. My job is not, my job's definitely different than that, but I do oversee all of our marketing stuff, and we're a marketing agency. So, it is great. And I love my job. I have the freedom to, come on podcasts like this and promote my personal brand and that kind of stuff. And at the same time, it's been an incredible journey to see our company grow despite COVID-19 and all that. I know a lot of companies aren't doing that well, but, in our industry, thankfully enough, I don't mean to disparage anyone by any means, but thankfully enough, a lot of companies want to go online right now. Maybe they have a retail presence. So it's been very helpful for us in that sense. And it's been an incredible journey, man.
That's awesome, Michael. Just to kind of rewind a little bit, you're mentioning, and there's a lot so sorry about that, but you had a lot of value coming through. I didn't want to stop you there. So you're mentioning, you just started from day one and you just really loved the experience. Did you do any SEO, any marketing, any website development prior to this? Or were you just like, I had those dinner conversations and then I'm just feeling this and I'm going to go straight into it?
Yeah, it was really the latter. I knew a little bit. I mean, like I said, I didn't major in marketing or anything like that. Philosophy. So, I mean, I didn't know what a funnel was. I didn't know,
classic.
Leads. I knew leads. I know what a lead is, but
how do you actually do that? How do you bring that into the job?
Right. How do you bring in leads? And the one thing, and I think this is funny, my stepdad would probably laugh at me now for sharing this story, but we set something once. I sent it out and everything. Yep. And then about like a week later, he asked me, he was like, "Oh, how'd it do?" I was like, "I don't know." And he's like, "You don't know how it did?" I was like, I just thought we did stuff, I didn't know we had to track it. So that was like, it was probably like my first or second week, but that shows you where I was at, didn't know that kind of stuff at all.
No, for sure. And Michael, so that's fantastic. Just that process alone, dinner conversation starting from, "I don't like this. Let me talk about my Batman Nintendo 64 game," to like where you are now. So I kind of just want to even rewind it a little bit and try to connect some of the dots. When you did your English degree and you did your philosophy degree, do you think there's any tidbits that you took from that and applied to your marketing roles that you think the average person wouldn't have just by going into marketing?
I'm really glad you asked that, because, I know a lot of college majors, they prepare you for specific job roles. Yep. And I obviously didn't have that. Being a philosophy major, you know, that's not preparing you for anything specific at all. But I do think, you know, if I could do it again, I would pick philosophy, truthfully. It taught me how to think critically. It taught me to always look at things from both sides and to not, you know, just dive in and all that. And it taught me how to form my thoughts in ways that I can make sure that I'm thinking logically in situations where maybe I wouldn't otherwise. And I really think that's a huge part of where I am today, is just because it taught me how to think. It taught me how to analyze stuff, taught me how to read, it taught me how to just have conversations with people without getting upset with them that their viewpoint is different than mine, you know?
And kind of stepping back,
Exactly. And you know, I lead our marketing team, but I'm not going to pretend I'm the guy who has all the answers. There's no way, you know, there's no way that I could be better than every single person on my team all the time, 100% of the time. Definitely. Absolutely. They're going to have better thoughts than me. And my job is to produce results. It doesn't matter if I think of the ideas or not.
No, that's money. And you know, it's actually very, can't think of the right word right now, but it's very rare to see someone in such an executive position say something like that, you know. And sometimes they do, but you know, like when you're mentioning this, Michael, you can feel it, you know, like your words are in line with your thoughts. And it's really great to see, because I think one thing, just kind of relating even back to philosophy, is you're mentioning that it kind of, you know, sees from both pictures, but you're kind of even a little bit removing yourself from your ego, you know. It's like, it doesn't have to be me that succeeds. I'm here for my team. I'm here to facilitate it. Yeah. So, man, that's just great to see. I mean, I'd be happy to be part of your team. And I think anyone else just hearing this should be. So Michael, how long have you been in this industry for?
I just turned 30. I've been doing it since I graduated. So like 8 years.
8 years. And how have you seen the game change? Because I think 8 years ago, what was that, 2012, a little bit into Facebook marketing, way less CPMs and, cost per conversion, CPCs and like all that kind of stuff.
No, I'm sorry. You cut out just a little bit.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that. So have you seen the industry change?
It's been, I mean, it's changed immensely, truthfully. Yep. The things that, let's talk about social media, right? Everyone knows social media. You look at Facebook in 2012.
Yeah.
Completely different place. I mean,
you could,
if you were a business on Facebook in 2012, you could post stuff and everyone would see it.
Yeah.
And it was great. And there weren't a ton of businesses on there. You didn't have to run ads.
Yeah.
You could write an article and post it. And that's what I was doing. You know, like I said, I was a project manager for this one specific client, which was actually like a media and entertainment website.
Right.
And so I would write articles, I'd post them, and they'd get shares, they'd get comments, they get likes, and we built up a following of about 50,000 followers on Facebook. Nowadays, that 50,000 audience, it doesn't really mean anything to me because I post something and 1% of those people see it. And it's like, you know, it's just completely changed. It's gotten a lot more saturated. There's a lot more congestion and there's a lot more noise.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to cut through the noise now in ways that before you did not. So it's that with you know, the social media and then SEO, which is search engine optimization for those who don't know. Completely different world back then too.
Yeah.
SEO is where you're trying to, you know, get the top rankings on Google.
And
what you used to be able to do is create a page on your site, take the keyword you want to rank for, jam it in there like 100 times. And boom, you're number one.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work anymore, you know. Search engines want to serve the most relevant, trusted, accurate information to people every single time. Primarily Google, right? We all use Google. It's got like 90% market share.
Yep.
You know, when you type something into Google, Google wants to make sure that it's not going to serve you up the wrong answers. And so it's a completely different world. And you need to make sure that you're trusted in the eyes of Google if you want to rank. And so the whole philosophy has changed.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So Michael, one thing that I didn't actually share with you before is I actually used to be into website development. I ran my own e-commerce shop for a little bit. So I kind of know a little bit of these things. And I actually used to do a little bit of SEO for my one of my father's friends, and I worked for him a little bit.
Oh, awesome.
So I guess a little bit more of a specific question for you. So I think back in the day, I think it was 2008, 2009, maybe a little bit earlier, but when we wanted to do SEO, it was kind of like going through Google Keyword Planner, finding in the right words, throwing those in there, like you said, a million times, hoping for the best. And I think a little bit later, once I started my own e-commerce thing, the vibe was kind of to try to put your link into as many different websites, making sure that the link's not rejected. So for example, just throwing it onto Reddit a million times won't work as well as unique sites. What's the go-to way now? Because, you know, even if there aren't businesses, people want an exposure on their Instagram or whatever, whatever. What would your tips be for that? Pretty specific question.
I think when it comes to SEO, there are three, I try to break it down in a really, you know, easy way to digest. And I think there's three things you need to look at.
Okay.
The first thing is going to be your content. And when I say content, I mean your titles of your pages.
Yep.
You want to have a page, if you're a business or something like that, or, or just a person who's building a website, and there's a term you want to rank for, you should have a page on that term. Now, the body content that goes within that, search engines are better at reading words than they are at images or videos and things of that nature. So it's important that you've got some decent content on that. Generally, more words is better, but search engines are getting better at reading user intent too. So for example, if you search for something like, you know, how many calories in a grape, it's going to spit back at you a number really quickly. And then if you click into that article, it's just going to have that answer, right? If you're looking for how to build some type of really complex technical machinery, that's not going to be something that's easily spit out that you only need a few words for. You're going to really need to like lay that out on your page, right? If you want to rank for it. So understanding that user intent, I think, is huge. And just thinking about, is this something where people want more information when they search this term? Or is this more of a commercial intent? Does someone want to buy something when they search this term? And then understanding what type of page you want to rank. If you sell toothpaste, and someone, well, make sure that you're optimizing your product page for that. You wouldn't want your blog page on what is toothpaste trying to show up there. You'd have a really hard time with that. So content, I think, is number one. Right. Number two is your technical SEO. Right. And that's going to be your site speed. That's going to be all the stuff on the back end that, you know, truthfully, you might need to do a little reading on your own or tap into an expert for something like that. It can get a little complex. You've got your sitemaps. You've got your robots file that tells search engines how to crawl it. You've got meta tags, meta descriptions, things like that that need to be worked at. So all of those things are kind of on the back end, but some can be visible to the user on the front end too. But that stuff's all very important. And site speed is becoming more and more and more important. Mobile friendliness. I think at this point, if your site's not mobile friendly,
you're kind of out of the game.
You're in big trouble. You need to be mobile friendly. Platforms like Wix, Squarespace, Weebly, those are all very easy to use. And they're nice for putting up a website. But I will say they're a bit limited when it comes to SEO capabilities, especially in the technical portion. So what I would recommend to people is if you're building a website, a little bit more of a learning curve, but I would recommend WordPress. I think WordPress is great. But if you're selling things, go Shopify. Shopify is super, super user-friendly as well. Those are the two CMS platforms I really recommend. And then third is going to be your link building, which you touched on. So it's really important, like I was saying previously, search engines want to serve up results that they trust. And one of the best signals of trust that you can have out there is a link from another website that's authoritative or authoritative in your niche coming back to your site. Because that means that webmaster or that business owner had to contact the webmaster or someone on their team to go in and manually add a link that they thought was going to be relevant to their audience to come back to your website. And so it's the hardest part of SEO to get links back to your site. There are places you know, you can go in directories and just add your own links and stuff, but those aren't as, I mean, powerful. They'll help, but you're right. They're not as powerful. They're not. And you know, different types of links are weighed differently too. So a link from Reddit, like you were saying, is going to be a no follow link, which means it doesn't pass any kind of SEO authority
value.
Same thing with media platform. all those are no follows. Wikipedia is also a no follow. So,
sorry, Michael, to cut you off. I think it was lagging. Yeah. So did you mention social media is also no follow?
Yes, social media is also no follow. So those don't count for SEO. If someone's trying to tell you, you know, posting on social media is part of their SEO strategy, I don't know.
We got to get him to talk to Michael Norris at your agency. Yeah, that's what we need to do.
don't roll with that. The last thing I'll say on that is there are a lot of people out there who will offer to do SEO and they'll do so very cheaply, like $250 a month. Just make sure that they're not lying to you. And it's hard because it's a lot of it's behind the scenes and you don't really know what's going on. But you know, we've just seen a lot of people fall victim to that and they don't do anything and they just take your money. So just be aware of that.
Yeah. It's actually really interesting that you mentioned that. I had a friend, he was kind of working as a project manager, kind of assistant to the CEO of the company. I won't get into details because probably best to stay away from it. But they actually got an email from someone in Seattle and they mentioned, hey, let me take over your social media, SEO, you know, we'll get your business out there and give me $2,000 a month. Now, this individual, we looked at their page. They also said website development. The website looked like it was from 1998. Just cringy, right? You know, like a basic WordPress YouTube tutorial could do you better. And, you know, like three Instagram posts with copyrighted images. It's, you know, and it's not even just about like the post, but like having copyrighted images, that's potential legal troubles, right? And I guess like...
don't do that.
Yeah, do not do that. what would your advice be for looking for someone for an ad agency? And like, even if the costs are a little bit higher, like how are some ways that people can find someone to represent them as a person or as a business?
Yeah, I think ultimately there are a lot of agencies that are button pushers, right? And they'll talk to you and say, this is the tool that we're using, whether it's Google Ads, Facebook Ads, you know, any kind of social media platform, whatever. And they're going to talk to you about how they're masters of this tool and they can do the best job for you. Yep. In reality, we all use the same tools for the most part with slight variations. And they change. These platforms change. Facebook ads changes like once a month. It's insane. I don't even know why they change it so much. It's terrible. Yeah. But to be masters of pushing these buttons and making things work well, or you have some kind of hack that other people don't, that's super temporary if you're even telling the truth. Because things change so often that I just wouldn't go for someone who says that they're the best agency in the world at whatever particular thing. What I would look for is someone that you trust that's going to actually strategize with you and care about your business. If someone, this is a telltale sign. Yeah. If you come to them or they come to you and they say, you need this before a word even leaves your mouth, they're not listening to you. They're trying to sell you something. And it's very, very important that they listen to you and your concerns and what your goals are. Maybe your goal is, I don't know, like you want 10% more revenue in the next year, or you want to get 10% more market share than you currently have. There are different ways of achieving those goals. So for someone to come in and just say, you need this, and this is the solution, and they prescribe a solution to you, they didn't listen to you at all. And I would just run the other way.
That's huge. That listening part, that's so important. You know, I'm glad you touched on that, Michael, because I think that's something that's missing nowadays. You know, everyone's kind of just like, listen to me. I'm the guy, I'm the girl, you know, I'm the person who's going to get this done. But it's really about that. I mean, like, and usually when people go out to ad agencies, especially at a time like a pandemic, like COVID, you know, people are worried because the difference between their market or them getting a bit more share of their market is the difference between going out of business and staying in. And, you know, you just get a smooth talker saying, oh yeah, you know, you do this, I've been in the business for this much. And then, you know, take your money. And marketing is something that's just changed so much, even since like the 2000s, you know, like we're talking radio and I don't remember, TV ads and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
It's out now. Like, I guess just even expanding on that with your experience, what do you think the difference is between social media and radio? Like, why should someone go with social media nowadays?
Yeah, sorry, you cut out, but I caught the question.
Okay, sweet.
So the biggest thing I would say is on social media, if you're going to run social media these days, you either need to be very creative or you need to run ads, pretty much.
Yep.
You know, if you just start posting, nothing's really going to happen for you, at least, you know, it depends on your goals, but most likely not. So the thing I would say, like, let's compare social media ads to radio. With social media ads, you can have a variety of different objectives and you can build a funnel. So what I mean by that is you could have a video that you recorded, which could be, it could be something like this. Like, your videos don't need to be super professional. What they need to do is stick out in the feed. So if it's you sitting behind, you know, like, you got an iPhone and you film yourself talking, that's totally fine. But think about who the audience is on the other side of that. So with radio, you're targeting, like, traditional radio, you're targeting a massive swath of people. And sure, your target market's in there somewhere, but there's also a ton of other ears that this is going to fall on that are unlikely to buy from you.
Exactly.
With social media ads, I can target 34-year-old men in the state of Arizona who like hiking. And my ad can say, hey, do you like hiking? Do you want to, like, that's huge, right?
Yeah.
And so I can take then someone who watched 75% of my video, and then I can run another ad to those people.
Yeah.
And I can get them to click on my site, land on my site, see my offer, see my hook, my my proof that, you know, I'm not just some bogus whoever, and get them to buy from me or get them to use my service.
Yeah.
With radio, it's different. I mean, it's you record the spot, you put it out there, and it's harder to track the results of.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, you can't just like use analytics and track all the clicks. Like, people will come to your site, but it's going to be through in Google Analytics when it comes through, it's going to be direct traffic, which means, or it's going to come through as organic. So you might think like, oh, a lot more people are searching for me. Yes, but that's because of your radio ads. So just know, you know, like, if you're doing other things, it comes through in different ways. But radio is typically good for, I would say, larger companies doing a branding play. Now, you can sell things on the radio, but it, to me, it's not a cost-effective way to do it.
It's a shotgun.
Whereas, it's a shotgun approach. It's a shotgun approach, and you can't get as ingrained with your actual ads as you would be somewhere else. And that's my biggest thing.
Absolutely. And I think even just the fact that you can't, you know, like, let's say I have a radio, I'm going to say, oh, we go out to 2 million people. Okay, how are you even getting those numbers?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know how many people are tuning in when your ad's coming? How do you know how many people are coming in that like hiking or whatever, right? And with the social media marketing, you can see exactly how many people click the ad, see the ad, go to your website. And nowadays, I'm not sure if you can get it from the ad agency, from like you agency, but I know from running your own e-commerce business, you can get something called Lucky Orange, where you can literally follow them through your website, see where they click, see where they leave, and then you can optimize it from them. It's kind of like you're just creeping on someone, as weird as it sounds, through your site. So, you know, if they go up and read one word, oh, I guess I should remove that word if that's what's making them leave, right? And it's, you can't get that through radio. There's no feedback, right?
Correct. Yeah. And you bring up a really good point in that you're usually looking at a schedule.
Yeah.
And the sales reps that you talk to, again, you want to find someone that you trust, because they might stick you in a time slot where, you know, maybe they say they'll put you in the morning drive, which is great. You know, that's a really good time. A lot of people listen to the radio, but they might extend that first hour to like 6 a.m. or so, 5 a.m. And just slip that in there without you really realizing it. And then your ads are running at 5 a.m. and you know, there's not as many people there and you're paying that premium slot. Same thing. Like, they say, look, I'm not trying to say radio is bad. I'm just saying it's not for everyone. And you need to know that. But to your other point with, you know, looking at website traffic coming in, I mean, you can record individual users and see how they use your site in an effort to make it better. And I want people to know, I know privacy is a huge concern nowadays, rightfully so. You should be concerned. You should be. You should be concerned about your privacy. But marketers, we use this kind of stuff. It's totally anonymous. I mean, we don't know that it's you or me who's the one doing it. I'm not like, you know, oh, my neighbor Joe's on the site. I'm going to see what he's doing. Like, no, I don't know that. And I only know my own websites too. I can't see what someone else is doing on someone else's site. Know that. So we do record sessions and things like that, and we'll use heat maps too. So we'll see like if, you know, 20 people clicked on this link, but 5 clicked on this link, like, okay, then more people are interested in this versus that. Same thing with what you said with various words. And we might run 2 versions of a web page, and one serves up 50% of the time. The other one serves up the other 50% of the time. Yep. And we compare the results from the two. Yep. These are all things that we're doing just to serve our customers better. We want to create a better experience on the web for you. It's not malicious, you know? I get it. Like, Google and Facebook have way too much information on us. They do. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, totally put all my faith in these platforms. Like, no, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And you should look at that. But at the same time, know that, you know, agencies and stuff, we don't have malicious intent. We're just trying to do better.
Yeah. And I think doing better, it's for the business, but it's also for the customers, right? Because if they go to a site and then they're really interested in a product, but, you know, maybe there's one word or one image or XYZ, we can remove that and we can put something that makes them, you know, understand the product a bit better.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's kind of just what it's about, even through the email list or whatever, maybe reaching out, getting some more research from the person, like having an interview and just making everything better. So I guess if you were, now let's go down the other route. So now that you've learned so much about marketing, what have you done to kind of, you know, change your own lifestyle when it comes to the internet? Like, do you do things differently? Do you think like your phone records from you when you're walking? Like, what's the vibe with that?
Well, I've got Amazon Echo right next to me over here. Yeah. You might've heard a ding when I got a package, but no, I don't do a ton of stuff to, you know, worry about privacy. I'll be honest, but I watched The Social Dilemma, which everyone I think should do. That is well worth the watch. You know what I'm saying? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh man, you should watch it.
I'll get on it.
It's good. And the people who created this technology don't even really let their kids use it, which I think is very telling. But after watching that, I did turn off from all my social media apps. I turned off notifications because I learned through that these algorithms, I mean, I get it, right? There's an attention economy, and these platforms are all competing for your attention. Absolutely. If YouTube changes something that increases average viewership time by 5 minutes, that's 5 minutes taken away from Instagram. And then Instagram's got to figure out how to get that 5 minutes back from you, because the longer you're on the platform, the more money they make. And so they can tell you all day that they're trying to make these things not addictive, but at the end of the day, their business model relies on it.
Yep.
And they've got a lot of stakeholders who are invested in them making money. And money rules the world.
It does.
So I turned off all my notifications, because I know that if I get a notification from Instagram that someone just joined, it doesn't mean they actually like just joined in that second. It means Instagram knows that this is a vulnerable time period for me where I'm willing to swipe that notification and spend about 20 minutes on Instagram.
Absolutely.
So I just removed all that kind of stuff, and I'll check social media on my own time when I'm ready to, and then I leave when I'm ready to. And that's been my strategy.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting that you mentioned the notification. So my own little background, I was a kinesiology major, and I actually had a research project for my honors thesis in sensory motor neuroscience lab. And that's kind of just how I like it, you know, like the brain stuff, neuroscience, really interesting for me. One interesting thing about neuroscience and one of the labs we took in physiology is they literally had a research paper that was told from us. When you hear a notification on your phone or whatever, it literally increases your heart rate. And I believe it was increased your blood pressure as well. Don't quote me on the latter, but wow, right? And you'd have to think about like why this would be and what effects this would have. Well, in the wild, you know, when you had increased heart rate and increased blood pressure, it means it's go time, you know, it's fight or flight. You know, you have a lion coming to you, are you gonna punch it, or are you gonna run and up the tree or something, right? And the interesting thing about that one, Michael, it's when that happens, we kind of release a lot of, cortisol, which is a stress hormone. and doesn't even allow us to think nearly as well. Now, think of the long-term play here, right? The thinking part of our brain is going to be continually wear it down, right? So our thoughts are going to be less effective, and we can't even focus nearly as much because we just have this rolling through. Now, beyond all that, it actually leads to a lot of health complications as well. Really interesting point. We're going to take forever to go down that rabbit hole, so I'll end it there. But it's just something to, you know, further your point. It's so important. Okay. And I think even something else, if people are looking to take away from Instagram and all that, just delete the app and go on your phone. Looks uglier, you will spend less time. No. Okay, so I'm cognizant that Michael is a busy man. So I guess let's just go with a couple, two last things. If you could give some advice to yourself 10 years back, okay, and kind of just, you know, when you're in the middle of college, finishing up college, what would you say, Michael? Like, what would you say to that younger Michael?
Probably quite a few things, to be honest with you. I would tell myself to go to class more, number one. But the other thing I think, truthfully, I think the number one thing that I'd want to take out of it would be to learn more and to actually really apply myself. Because I'll be honest, I had too much fun in college. I spent 5 years in college. And it, I changed majors, but I could have gotten four. I could have. But I was lazy, man. I was super lazy. I was super messy. I drank all the time. And I did not have good habits. And I was always confident in myself that, you know, I think I'm pretty smart. But I'll let everyone else be the judge. But I was always confident in myself that I'd land on my feet. But my whole life, I kind of coasted. And once I really started to apply myself is really when I found success. And I wasn't sure that I was ever going to be able to get to that point. Quite honestly, I really thought that, you know, I just had these bad habits. I was lazy. And I had never been in a situation where I needed to really try and really apply myself. But then there'd be like, you know, crunch time would come around and it's midterms. I haven't been to class since the first class. And hey, I got to take this massive test. I haven't studied. And so I would sit, I would just cram for like 2 days and I'd make it. But you know, that's not the way to be. And I'm confident there's so much I've missed out on because I was that way. And now, you know, like I read, I take in everything that I can. I'm constantly listening while I'm working. I'm listening to marketing podcasts, trying to bring in more information. And I can't tell you, like, podcasts are amazing. I'm not even saying this because I'm on a podcast, but the amount of knowledge you can get and just the different perspectives from people.
Absolutely.
It's like, it's amazing, man. And people didn't have this kind of stuff, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Where
they could get all these perspectives from people. And it's just helped me shape my thoughts so well. So I would urge myself to really apply myself and to consume media from really good places that I trust.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And just kind of going back a little bit, you mentioned that in college, you didn't really have that drive to, you know, like not succeed, but like, you know, very much motivate yourself and push through. What do you think that you learned after gave you that? So like our viewers can kind of pick that up and put it in their own pockets, so to speak.
Yeah, two things. Number one, it was that I was empowered by my boss to succeed. And he essentially put it all on my shoulders and was like, take this, here's the foundation we built and here are the results we need to see. Right. And I was like, all right, I'm going to figure it out. If I don't, I'm going to get fired. And I loved that was how it went. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like I loved that because I just sat and I did it, man. And I told you at the beginning, I like video games. I love like RPG games where you level up and you figure stuff out. It was like, I felt like that, you know, like I was in a situation like that. And ultimately it was the fear of failure. The fear of failure is what drove me. And then it became passion. I realized that I was good at this and I was like, wow, you know, this is something that's fun. Like I get these, you know, I'll give you a specific example. I wrote an article on the Chicago Blackhawks had won the Stanley Cup. And like I said, we were a media entertainment website based in Chicago. Well, I wrote this article saying where the parade was going to be. I didn't actually know where the parade was going to be. I'm not going to lie to you. But I posted it right as the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup on social media. And it got a ton of shares. It basically like went viral in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
So many retweets, so many shares on Facebook, all this stuff. Our server crashed. Our website couldn't even handle it. And the second that I knew when the actual parade was, I just added it to the article. But the headline, I'll be honest, it was clickbaity. I didn't have the information, but I said, check back when we get it.
Yeah.
And then I just added it in like 20 minutes later. But because I hit that exact time period,
so
I mean,
smart.
The dopamine rush for something like that, I was all in. And it's those victories, I think, that really propelled me to keep going.
Man, that is fantastic. I don't even know what to kind of even say. That's just, I haven't actually heard that one. My buddy did something similar. I won't get into that, but
sure.
That is so smart. man. Yeah. So I guess, Michael, going back to the initial drive factor. So it was your boss was saying, you know, like, I'll give you the keys. You got the keys, take the car. If you crash it, you're out and you better get there on time. Right. So if that wasn't the case and, you know, he said like, you know, just do your best. Do you think that would have given you the same results, or like, where do you think you would have been now if that was what your boss would have said?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can relate it to when I worked for my parents.
Yep.
I what were they going to do? Fire me? I'm their kid.
Yeah.
So it was a completely different situation where of course they were teaching me all kinds of stuff, but I just didn't feel fulfilled in the role I was in. And it was, I don't even know how to describe it, but I would not be here today where I'm at if I stayed under their wing, because I was protected in a way. I was sheltered, where I needed to jump and to have the, you know, the ground underneath me, just the rug be pulled away and me kind of soar through the air and see where I land to really figure it out. And when you've got something that you can fall back on, you don't have that, you know? And you hear this a lot with like musical artists and stuff where they're like, I had to throw it all away and just go all in on this thing.
Yeah.
And not to compare myself, because, you know, I'm nowhere near that level, but I really think that there's something to that when you know you can fall back on something, when you know that there aren't real consequences to not performing, it becomes very easy to get lazy.
Absolutely. Michael, have you read the book Art of War by Sun Tzu by any chance?
Oh, I wish I have. I really wish I have, but I'm not.
Yeah. So I'll give you one little spoiler. So hopefully you won't hate me too much for it.
No, but
it relates very nicely to this. You know, you felt you had the ground taken away from you and you had to roll. Sun Tzu himself was, I believe he was a Chinese general or very high in the army. Mm-hmm. And in one battle, they had to go on ships. These individuals left the ships. They went onto a beach or wherever they landed, and they had to face a lot of other individuals from the opposing army. You know, people were worried. And then Sun Tzu, what he did is he took fire, he burnt the ships.
Oh, I've heard this. Yeah.
Right? Because now there's no way out. Because before, everyone's like, okay, what if we flee and we get to see our wife? Well, the ships are burnt now. You have to go forward. And I think in a way, that's what happened with you. You know, before there was, the ships were there when you were with your parents, but now you're in a different company and you have those same choices, whether you can, you know, go back to the ship, go home, you know, just chill, don't do any of the job. Or you can go do the marketing and do it, because if you don't, you're fired. And I think this is a very important lesson in life. A lot of people are, you know, saying like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do this, or saying like, oh, you know, I should study, but like, oh, whatever, because there's no serious consequence for them. But you need to make your own consequences. And in your case, it was really nice that your boss did that. Well, really nice. It's kind of interesting, right? Because anyways, I think it's nice too. I agree with that. Yeah. I think it takes a level of maturity to realize and appreciate that, but try to give yourself, you know, that little push. If there is no fail, I think the biggest drive for people is the fear of a loss of something rather than the happiness to gain something. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things I was learning.
Oh, I agree.
I can't quote that, but if we can do that, that would be probably the best. Now, Michael, this has been super amazing, but I am cognizant that you have to go soon. So I guess is there any, so I'll ask you for the one message that you want to give our viewers, just from your own personal process, your own experience in life and all that. And then after, just, you know, a little pitch for you agency and for people that want to get on or do something with your company. So,
yeah, I would say the number one message to take away, truthfully, is just Man, it's hard to narrow it down to one, but I think
big question.
Genuine and authentic and true to yourself is the key. If you're not, you try to be something you're not going to be happy. So definitely just be genuine all the time. And everything that you do when you meet people, when you shake their hand, just be you. And then don't be afraid to be you because you're you and no one else is. And that's with that being said, I work for a company. We're called UTech. We're an agency. If you go to utechagency.com, you can reach us. I also have my own podcast. It's a video show similar to this. It's called You Talk. It would be great if you signed up. We talk about marketing stuff if you're interested at all. And I'd love to love to add you to the audience.
Yeah, would love that, Michael. Thank you again for coming on the Personal Process Podcast, dropping just knowledge after knowledge after knowledge and just genuine vibes, man. I feel like I would get along with you in person so well. So thank you again, thank you again for being on the Personal Process Podcast, Michael, and to the viewers. Thank you for tuning in for another amazing COVID episode online, and we'll see you on the next one. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys. Parham back after another amazing episode with another amazing guest. We hope we added value into your life and you took away some tips that you could add to your tool belt and fuel your process forward. If you do know any friends or family members who would enjoy the same value that you got today, we'd really appreciate if you told them and let them know about us. And, you know, if you could also subscribe and rate the podcast, well, that would just be fantastic. If you did all three, well, you'd really fuel our process forward. So thank you in advance. And always remember, trust the process.